You're listening to the Prepper Recon Podcast. For questions, comments, and podcast archives, go to PrepperRecon.com. Ready-Made Resources is a trusted name in the prepper community because they've been around for 18 years. They offer great prices on night vision, water filtration, long-term storage food, solar energy components, and provide free technical service. Get ready for an uncertain future at ReadyMadeResources.com.
I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
Hi, Preppers and Patriots. This is the second half of my interview with Chef Keith Snow. Enjoy the show. I signed up for your food storage feast mini course. And I hope everybody that's listening is going to sign up for that because I think it's a lot of value there for free. One of the things I learned is that the longer grain rice varieties have a lower glycemic index and a higher amount of protein. And I think that might be something that would be important to know, especially if somebody's in a survival situation and they need to eat a really good meal that's going to last them for a long day. You know, maybe they're bugging out or they're going on a long hunting trip or they've got a really long patrol or something like that where they need to have that energy sustaining them for a longer period of time. I think that's something that could be really helpful, but food storage is definitely a cornerstone of preparedness, and I suppose rice is definitely one of the cornerstones of food storage. But as I just mentioned, there, all rice is not created equal. Is that right? Can you tell us a little bit about rice, about maybe about how the different aromatic varieties, how they store in comparison to regular white rice?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I mean, and this is something that people kind of learn about when they start into this journey is what foods can store well. And of course, people, you know, they learn right away that, oh, you can store, you know, beans, for example, but not all beans store forever, and they get harder to cook the longer they go. And not all rice is good to store, like brown rice, which, you know, has a little more nutrition in it than white rice. It stores not even half the time, so it's really not a great thing to store. I mean, if you're going to use it in a year or two, maybe, but it's not going to go much longer, and that's because it's more of a whole grain. So some foods do store longer than others, and rice is definitely one of those. Now, I keep, personally, I always have brown rice, but I don't store it for longer than a year. So that's not something that I spend much time or money storing. But we keep several varieties, aromatic varieties. We do keep long grain rice, which is a little boring, but it is a great storage rice. But we love the aromatic rices. There's some great ones that are grown in South Carolina. We do keep some of that. And then we keep basmati. We keep quite a bit of jasmine rice. And that's where our main focus is for rice, because those will store a long time, and they are so versatile. Literally everything from appetizer, entree, dessert, main course can be made with those meals. And, you know, your point about nutrition and having to go longer, grains like farro, we store farro, wheat berries, whole oat groats. I mean, the Roman armies, and they marched on farro. I mean, that was the Middle East was run on wheat. I mean, people don't realize how much. I mean, these are complete foods: rice, wheat, all these type of things, potatoes. Potato flakes are an unbelievable thing to have in your preps. These foods can fuel your body. There's no question about it. And one of the things in this sort of world that we live in here, preppers and preparedness and people that are interested in farming and all that, there's a lot of folks that spend too much of their time and effort worrying about, you know, meat. And meat is great, but if there was ever a crisis, you know, you can't rely on meat because most people don't have a source of it. I mean, if you have cows out in your yard that you can butcher, yeah, you'll have a fresh supply of meat, but most people are storing it. And let's face it, when you store it, you're either refrigerating it or you're freezing it. I mean, you can do it. You can dry some of it. Sure, that's a source of it. But very quickly, you're going to learn that that's not really an option for any type of long-term situation. So when you start thinking about long-term or just hard times in general, the carbohydrate foods, these type of foods that we're talking about, are the go-to foods. I mean, every large, successful population throughout world history has existed on starch, like rice, like beans, like corn, like wheat. And they haven't, you know, survived on T-bone steaks and pork chops. Those things require an awful lot of energy to produce, because it's just, you know, you need a lot of land and all that. And then they need to be kept cold. You need a lot of land. I mean, a lot of electricity and power. And these things might be in short supply if there's ever a crisis. So people need to get used to the fact that these long storing foods like rice, like wheat, like beans, canned foods, these are the go-to foods. And I tell people, develop what I call culinary inventory. And this is a list of things, because most people don't have, you know, they don't make a tremendous amount of foods. And you know what? I'm going to, I got to just yell to my daughter real quick. This is real life, folks, but I've got a soup on the stove. They're watching TV. I can hear them in the other room. So just let me take 5 seconds, Mark, and then I'll be sure right thing. Back to finish that thought. Hold on. All right, sorry about that.
That's quite all right.
Yeah, so trying to catch my train of thought back, you know, people need to build on their skills in the kitchen, because most folks are working with, you know, 5 to 10 kind of go-to meals. And I would tend to guess that most of those go-to meals are not going to be super survival oriented. And this is where this Food Storage Feast course, and people can find it if they go to foodstoragefeast.com. There is a mini course there. But they can start to learn about these foods. And that's what I wanted people to do, is to take each one of these ingredients and kind of jump in. And what we're doing is, like for rice, we're just creating lots of recipes. Like I'm looking right now at some of the key recipes that are in the rice section: Mexican rice, green rice, Thai fried rice, confetti rice, coconut raisin rice pudding, porcini mushroom risotto, you know, freeze-dried foods, beef stroganoff, spinach alfredo lasagna, chicken pie, freeze-dried chicken tacos, Korean beef barbecue, naked quiche, Swedish meatballs, pork green chili, broccoli cheddar soup. I could go on and on and on in the potato section, in the bean section, salt cod, so wild game, corn, wheat, pasta, oats, canned foods. These are all things that we're developing recipes for, to get people to grow this culinary inventory that I talk about, and to learn that rice or beans or any one of those things can be amazing foods. And you know, you can have, like I said, a lot of these things are great, like farro, for instance. It can be a breakfast cereal, it can be a salad at lunchtime, and it can be an amazing entree at dessert, I mean at dinner. And it can be dessert too. It can be all of those things. It's very versatile. I mean, you can't, that T-bone steak, I mean, that thing is dinner only. You're not eating it for breakfast. It's not going to be dessert. So if you know how to treat these foods, how to spice them, how to season them, how to mix other things into them, all of a sudden you have on hand skills and knowledge. And this is something that, why I made the courses, because nobody's really out there teaching that. I mean, you can find some things on YouTube, but they're, a lot of times there isn't any recipe. A lot of times, more often than not, 99% of the time, the person teaching it really does not understand food preparation or recipe development. If you follow the recipes, you wind up, I mean, and I've tested some of that stuff, and it's like, what? You know, follow the recipe to the T. I'm like, this doesn't work. It's a total, you know, I just wasted all this food because this didn't turn out. And I knew going into it, I said, this doesn't seem right, because, like I said, I've got, you know, quite a few chops in recipe development and formulation, and I know how to make things taste good, and, you know, also to teach easy ways to do it. Now, these recipes, they're not, it's not like, oh my gosh, I mean, this guy's he's a chef and I can't do it and I don't have the white jacket. That's all horse manure. I mean, this is easy stuff and I don't make it very difficult, but the results are great. I mean, and it's just, there's skills that you need to develop. And in the course, not only are there recipes there, but each one has a video. And it's not where I'm in the video. Now, I'm in the video, but just from the elbows down. I wanted the food to be the star of the show. I wanted people to see, right, you know, a lot of times you'll see a recipe, you know, on YouTube or whatever, and you can never actually see what's going on in the pot. It's kind of grainy and just lousy footage. In our videos, they're, you know, it's high def footage and it's shot very close. So you see exactly how each thing is cut, seasoned, cooked, handled, whatever it might be. And it just makes it easy to have a copy of it, not only in print, but in video. And the, you know, the platform that we have the course on, it can go right on your, you know, your laptop, your iPad, your mobile phone. So, you know, it's pretty interesting. I know your question was simply about rice. That's a long answer, but I think you could take that to any of the long-term storable foods, and I'd probably give you the same answer.
Food fatigue's a big problem that we hear about in preparedness circles when we're talking about long-term survival. Do you think the average prepper is thinking about actual menu items when they're stocking their long-term storage pantries, or are they just trying to stick some stuff in there to keep them alive?
I would say the latter, and that's not a guess. That's this comes from, and I wouldn't have made this course if I didn't hear from, you know, hundreds of people through the years that said, "What am I going to do with all this stuff? I've got." I mean, I hear it all the time, and then I'm starting to hear a lot of it from people that grow foods, you know, live animals, you know, fish, you know, that may have aquaponics, that have ducks, that are raising goats, whatever they're raising. They're like, what am I going to, you know, I've got all these, I've got a 50 pound turkey this year, or we've got 20 turkeys. How am I going to cook them? They're not prepared. So, and you know, everybody does the same thing. I'm guilty of it too. I mean, I've grown gardens where, you know, my neighbor who is this woman, I mean, you want to talk about a green thumb. She's from New Hampshire and she lived on the farm next to mine. And these people, you know, they were just a perfect example of a prepper who would never call themselves a prepper. But you went down in their basement and they had shelves filled with, you know, high quality foods, canned foods, whatever it might be. And then the gardening every year, the food that she canned and put up. This woman could grow everything and her garden was amazing. And I remember her telling me, why are you growing, you know, what are you going to do with all that cabbage or all those tomatoes? You know, I'd have like 45 tomato plants, all these heirloom seeds. And I'm thinking, I mean, I'm going to eat it, of course. And it's impossible to eat it all. And people don't quite, you know, grasp that when they go into it and they don't think about how they're going to use it. You know, when that 50 pound bag of rice comes and you put it in, you know, people are taking it and doing 20 pounds in, you know, Mylar bags and getting buckets and buckets and buckets of that stuff. But, you know, you should have the recipes in mind when you go into it, when you buy the ingredients. And a lot of the things that people buy, you know, simply just go to waste. You know, beans, you store beans for 10 years, they become very difficult to cook. So you need to start rotating through the stuff. And that's why, you know, I create a lot of recipes to use these foods, a lot of bean recipes, because beans, I mean, they become like gravel after a while and you can cook them. I mean, I've had some beans stored since 2008 and they're very difficult to cook at this point. You can pressure cook these things. It just, what happens is eventually there's a little hole in beans and it's written about in the course. I can't quite remember what it's called. And there's a lot of written information in the course as well. And I have a partner that lives in the wilds of Montana. We were neighbors for a short time and he's my writer. And he's written about a lot of these little things. And one of them is that the bean has a little, you know, little hole in it. And that's what lets the liquid in to allow you to cook it. And over time, that hole, as this thing, I mean, yeah, it's a dried bean, but after a few years, it becomes almost impossible to cook them properly, because that little hole closes up. So these are all just a little intricacies of storing foods and using them that I don't think a lot of people think about.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, and water filters. Use coupon code PREPRECON for 5% off your order at CampingSurvival.com. Trading Post in the Woods is ran by veteran crisis responders who know how important it is to be prepared. They specialize in comprehensive natural survival remedy kits, preparedness and homesteading supplies, as well as skills training. Visit them online today at tradingpostinthewoods.com. What about spices? Other than salt and pepper, I don't typically see many spices offered by long-term storage companies. While you're answering that, what's the best way to preserve spices and how long can they store?
Yeah, that's a good question. This is something that we've talked about in the course, and I promote a lot in the course, is using flavor. And this is where, you know, again, the knowledge. Rice, you boil some rice, it doesn't taste like much at all. And if you just serve that, I mean, everyone's gone to the Chinese restaurant and you get the amazing, you know, beef and broccoli that's loaded with MSG and flavor. I mean, it's just, it sings in your mouth. And then there's the thing of steamed white rice. I mean, that tastes like nothing. And sometimes it's great for it to taste like nothing if you're just going to put something on top of it. But knowing how to season foods is something that I go into in depth in the course. And there's a lot of recipes that feature things that can be stored, spices and seasonings, and also jarred items, you know, soy sauces, fish sauces, coconut milk, canned tomatoes. Those things store a long time, and they can, you know, chili paste. I mean, you can have these things for 10 years. A lot of people just think of jarred food. It's, you know, because they go by, oh, best buy date. You know, you buy a jar of something and, you know, maybe it's 11 months. But that's just, and coming from the food industry, I know why there's labeling laws and all that kind of stuff. But these foods last a lot longer than that. So those are items that we talk about in the course that you can use to flavor foods. But spices and herbs, dried spices and herbs should, I mean, they last, you know, probably about a year, I would say, usable in, you know, just the glass jars. But if you're going to have them longer than that, it's a good thing to vacuum pack them. And we have a lot of herbs. I mean, I sell spices on Amazon, you know, under the brand name Harvest Eating. We also sell some pasta sauces and things like that. But what I do is I'll take spices, and I like to buy them in bulk. And you don't need to go crazy. Again, I'm not suggesting that people, you know, make dumb decisions and buy 5 pounds of cumin, because over your lifetime, you may not use that much. But there's nothing wrong with going out and getting, you know, 2 or 3 ounces of the spices that you think you'll use, cumin, coriander seeds. And you can buy the seeds because those last longer. Anytime you can buy seeds, whole cloves, those things last much longer. But you take those things and you can go to different health food stores and places that sell bulk foods, and you can buy them, you know, a couple ounces at a time. And that's a good way to do it. And then you take them home and you just put them through your vacuum sealer. And those are going to last a lot longer. But having those things put up is a very good idea. And, you know, in the course, you'll see there's a lot of herbs and spices that are sort of go-to things. And these are good things to have on hand because, like you said, if you ever needed to cook from your stored foods, being able to spice it and season it is key. And this is, you know, another reason why having a kitchen garden. Now, this isn't a long-term storable thing, but growing some of your own herbs, not relying on the supermarket. And herbs go great in pots. And you don't need every herb under the sun, but chives and thyme, rosemary, these are bushes. I mean, these things can go through winters where they're covered in snow and they come back the next year. And if they get any sunshine, if they're south-facing, which may not be the best in the hot summer, but you can still be clipping on these things all year long. And these are great enhancements to these bland carbohydrates that I'm talking about.
In your mini course, I see that most of the recipes use some long-term storage items as well as some fresh ingredients. I suppose you're assuming most people will supplement their food storage with a garden?
Yeah, that's definitely an assumption. And again, that kitchen garden is important. And growing some food yourself, having access to some local farmers, and then in the meantime, using the course as a tool, because a lot of people need certain things. Like, I'll just try to give some basic ideas of some equipment, and this is important for long-term survival is equipment. And, you know, as a dude, of course, the guns and ammo, you need all that. You need, you know, personal protection, and a gun is, you know, it's just a couple pound piece of metal without bullets, without ammo. Rifles and proper ammo, those things are good to have. But when you start to move over to the food side of things, you know, people don't realize, you know, how am I going to cook? And let's say you live in a cold climate. I mean, you're in Florida, so you're on easy street with cold. But somebody in, you know, Iowa, Idaho, you know, Michigan, any of these places, heck, it was 28 degrees here this morning. How do you cook? You can't bring a barbecue grill in your house. You know, anytime there's a storm, you know, don't use your generator indoors. People just don't think so well. I mean, if you're in an enclosed space, you need a way to cook. That means you need, and you don't have electricity, you need a little portable butane stove. Everybody listening should go to Walmart or go online. You can buy for $20, $25 maximum a hard case with a portable butane stove, and it plugs. I mean, it takes a cartridge of butane. It looks like a can of shaving cream, or it looks like a spray paint, basically. You can buy cases of those. Go on to Amazon or Walmart.com, whatever, and you can buy cases of butane for almost nothing. It's super cheap, a couple bucks a can. So I keep several cases of that stuff on hand, and I've got two of those stoves. Those can be run in the house because they don't put off crazy amounts of fumes. So that's an example of a very inexpensive piece of equipment that you need. Next up, what about a grinder? Now, I have several grinders, and my best grinder is called the Grain Mill. It comes from some good friends of mine in Montana. They were my neighbors, and they manufacture. If you can afford a grain mill, I highly advise it. It is a work of art. It will last. You can't kill it. It's so well made. So a grain mill is a great thing to have. What about storing water? You can go on to, you know, emergencyessentials.com. They've got amazing water systems to store water, 55-gallon. And here in Utah, people take this, and I'm going to talk about this. Hopefully you'll give me a minute or two to talk about it in a few minutes, but they store a lot of foods here. So what I'm getting at is we talked about guns, grinders, some cookware, all these type of things. Another great thing to have is a dehydrator, you know, canning things to can vegetables with. If you have all these things, you're in good shape. But if you don't, you need to save up and get them. Now, I always tell people, people are on salary. You know, they work, they've got a job, or they work only so many hours, or, you know, their income is their income. They may not, if they have families, maybe they don't have any time to go out and work extra hours to bring in money. A lot of people are just in this. You know, they live in this parameter, and this is how most people do. I'm not saying it as a criticism. I'm saying this is where you are. Where do you get any extra money? Well, it's staring you right in the face, and it's in your kitchen. Because if you need extra money, and if you're a dude out there, a lot of times, and I'm not trying to just say it's dudes only, because there's a lot of super smart, prepared women out there too. But a lot of times you'll find in a relationship, and I would say it could be 50-50, I don't know, but sometimes one member of the marriage is like, "Oh boy, those things are expensive, and, you know, we don't have the money for that." And it could be the wife, or it could be the husband. So where do you get the extra money if you live in that parameter of your job is your job, extra income? Yeah, maybe you'll get a 2% raise at the end of the year, maybe you won't. But the answer is in your kitchen. And if you look at what you're spending, a lot of people don't track it, but if you're the type that track it, just continue eating the way you eat for a month and get all the receipts, all the online charges, whatever, and get a total and figure what that is. Do it for a month or 2 weeks, whatever, and then decide to go into your long-term pantry. Even if you don't have one, you can still start buying. Go and take my course. That's the best $99 you can spend. Go in there and find 20 things that you like and start eating these things over and over. And start cooking from these carbohydrate-type foods, these long-term storable foods, and stop buying steaks and chops and expensive cheese and all that stuff, And that money that you need to increase your preparedness to buy these items that are critical, whether it be guns or grinders, it's staring you in the face and it's in your pantry. And I saw it firsthand how my grocery bill dropped like a rock. Now, I'm an extreme case. Like I said, I spend a lot more money on food than the average family, but there is serious dollars in your pantry, and you're eating a lot of money that could be saved to pay off debts, to pay off that car, to save for a down payment, to save for, you know, prep supplies. So that's something that I always kind of preach to people.
If you had to pick three vegetables that were the easiest things to grow, what would they be?
Potatoes would definitely be there. Let me think about that. I would definitely go for things that you could store. Potatoes, beets, cabbage, greens are very easy. And those things are all very healthy to grow, I mean, to eat, and easy to grow. And a lot of them can be stored in any number of ways. But that's what I would say. I mean, I remember I wanted to grow potatoes, and I dug, I think it was like 200 linear feet in this wonderful pasture, and I planted heirloom potatoes, several types. I think it was four different types, fingerlings, some Kennebec, some russets, and I harvested hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pounds of potatoes. And the funny thing was, we only wound up, you know, going and harvesting maybe half of the, out of the 100-foot row of fingerling potatoes, and these were all beautiful heirloom fingerling potatoes, we only dug up about, I don't know, half of that row. And then there was a freeze came, and I said, oh, the heck with it, I can't eat any more potatoes. And that was, you know, when I was learning about storing them, and we started cellaring them in this crawl space, and they would last a long time. And what happened was the next spring, I'm like, wait a minute, what the heck? These things came back, and I didn't know that. I mean, these are all things you learn by getting in there and doing it. But that those potatoes just became seed potatoes, and I had, you know, I mean, that next half of the row produced twice as much as the first half. I mean, it was the most interesting thing I'd ever seen. But yeah, things like that that grow underground are great to have, no doubt about it.
Sweet potatoes are like that as well. We had one sweet potato that we rooted, and now we've got one of our entire garden beds. It's just nothing but sweet potatoes, and they get, you know, we've got the concrete block raised bed because, you know, we're in Florida, so it's mostly sand. But they like the sandy soil. They don't do as well in the denser, like, clay soils and things. But they do very well in a compost. We just will grow them in bins. You know, you can put them, you can put a clipping from a sweet potato and just stick it in compost in a you know, a 5 gallon bucket or a like a plastic bin or whatever, and they'll fill the thing up. It's they're incredible, and you can eat the greens from sweet potatoes as well.
Yeah, and that's also, you know, if you grow beets, you can eat the greens for those. I mean,
right.
Broccoli is something that's fairly easy to grow. But yeah, I think a good place to check on that, if you go and look at, you know, growing barrel potatoes, you'll see people on there that, you know, you take drums or barrels and put potatoes in there. I mean, I've seen a guy off of one barrel, just with store-bought dirt, grew like 30 or 40 pounds of potatoes. So those are an easy thing to grow, and it's got to be one of the best foods there is. I cook a lot of potatoes, and we eat a lot of potatoes, and they're very filling and, again, super versatile. So, yeah, it's interesting. As you, the more you learn, the more you, you know, become kind of in awe of what you can do with a little bit of knowledge and hustle.
And beside your course, you've also got just tons of free recipes on harvesteating.com. One of them I just saw was for a Cato beef casserole. You know, here we are, we're at the first of the year now, and a lot of us have had picked up a little weight over the holidays, and I certainly fall into that category. So, you know, I'm definitely going to be looking into this Cato beef casserole. Can you tell us real quickly what's ketogenic diets and how do they differ from a paleo diet, and then maybe just walk us through that Cato beef casserole.
Sure. Well, people have looked into every kind of dietary strategy there is, and one way that you can definitely lose weight is, you know, using keto diets. It's short for ketogenic. It's basically a severe restriction of carbohydrates. And if you cut your carbohydrates down to the bone, you know, like under 50 grams a day, which can be difficult, you'll find that you can lose some weight. And a lot of people do, and I'm guilty of this too. I'll come off the holiday season, although I did really well at Thanksgiving, but people will come off the holiday season a lot bigger than they were, and they'll be like kind of panicked. But a lot of people do use the ketogenic diet as a way to lose weight. And you know, it's there's a lot of things you can eat on the ketogenic diet. There's also probably more things that you can eat, and it's a little different from paleo in the respect that it's much stricter on carbohydrates than paleo, and it's, you know, pretty heavy on dairy. There's a lot of people use a lot of dairy in keto diets, cream cheese, heavy cream, things like that, and a lot of people that are paleo, I mean, some of them make exceptions, but they're generally not eating a lot of dairy. So that keto casserole, I'm thinking back that I made that recipe quite a long time ago. So I'm trying to think.
Kale and cabbage and ground beef and what would be some of the
cauliflower?
What would be some of the seasonings that we put in there?
That one, of course, salt and pepper, but quite a bit of garlic, onions. And I think I put some Northern Italian seasoning in that one. And, you know, when you're doing that kind of diet, I mean, there's certain vegetables like greens and cauliflower. Now, it's interesting to see how the food companies will follow the dietary trends. You go into the frozen food section and all of a sudden you're going to see riced cauliflower, because cauliflower was, you know, the ugly stepchild of the vegetables for years. And now all these people eating low carb keto diets and other, you know, kind of sort of Atkins style diets are eating up the cauliflower. And it's such a great, you know, vegetable to eat. And you'll see it riced, because a lot of people will use it to make everything from pizza crust to something like you see in that casserole that you're talking about on my website that uses riced cauliflower. And one of the great things that a few months ago I was making was I was taking riced cauliflower and making sort of a Mexican casserole out of it. So, and this was very ketogenic friendly. There was eggs and cream and spices like cumin, garlic, onions, paprika, fresh cilantro, roasted tomatillos, all mixed in. And even, you know, just for seasoning, I would take about 5 corn chips and crush them up and mix them into this thing. And again, like I said, eggs. And it's all mixed together and baked in the oven in a casserole dish, and then you scoop it out. And man, that was a tasty dish. My sister, she's a pretty picky eater. She tried it and was like, "Whoa, this is amazing!" And you know, I put some chipotle salsa on top of it, and yummy, yummy, yummy. But I should mention to the listeners out there that you know, that's definitely, it's a good way to go if you want to lose weight quickly. But I will say, in all honesty, that is probably one of the hardest to follow diets there is. And it probably has the, you see the people on YouTube that are, you know, they were overweight and now they've got, you know, some six pack abs and all that. But these are the exception. It's a difficult diet to stay on. I'm not trying to tell anybody not to do it. If you are going to do it, you definitely need to check with your doctor as well and make sure that you're getting, first of all, fiber is a big problem. Make sure you're getting enough fiber, and that's a big problem, because when your digestion starts to slow down, and it will very fast on a keto or low carb diet, because you're devoid of a lot of fiber. Even if you're eating a lot of vegetables, when you cut things like rice and beans and grains out of your diet, you're losing a lot of that important fiber. So you have to just make sure that you're covering your bases with that diet, with fiber and vitamins, because you can start to go into some deficiencies pretty quickly. So it's something that does take a little knowledge, but I would mention to people that something like flax seeds, this is something I think everybody, if the only thing you hear from this interview is flax seeds, go to your local store and look for Bob's Red Mill. There's always a little section in the baking area. Buy some golden or even brown flax seeds. If you have got a spice grinder, buy them whole, and then, you know, fill up that spice grinder every couple of days. grind them to a powder. And then if you're eating keto or not, you want to aim to have 2 to 3 tablespoons of that flaxseed daily, because that is not only an amazing source of antioxidants, it has terrific fiber and it will keep your colon healthy. It is not just thought, it is proven to lower blood pressure. I mean, almost as much or more than most blood pressure lowering medicine. So flaxseed is a superfood. It can be made into crackers very easily. You take golden flax seeds and, you know, maybe a cup of them and add a few cups of water, stir it around, and after a few minutes, it's going to start to gel up. And this is what it does when you eat it. That's why it's such good for your digestion and your elimination. But if you take that and you pour that gel onto a sheet and put it into your dehydrator, you can make amazing flaxseed crackers. So everybody should be eating flax seeds. But if you're going to do a diet like keto, just make sure you know what you're doing. But personally, I've done that, and I've seen some results from the keto diet. And there's a lot of great resources out there on the internet. I do have a course on my site, tastyeducation.com, and that is a beef course, because a lot of people that, you know, decide to do a diet like that realize that, again, yeah, they know how to cook steak on the grill, but that's about it. And I've got something for keto and paleo people. It's called the Ultimate Paleo Beef Experience. And I just tried to, I'm looking at some of the recipes now: pesto, red pepper, meatloaf, French beef stew with red wine, shaved ribeye steak with ghee and onions and peppers. Let me see what else I've got there. Grilled tri-tip with garlic, balsamic, ghee drizzle, olive oil poached New York strip steak, top round roast, Bavarian sauerbraten, slow roasted short ribs with sticky barbecue sauce. I mean, there's a lot of great recipes in that one course. And that was aimed to help people that were paleo or keto come up with ideas for beef, because beef can grow old pretty quickly if you don't know what to do with it. And I guess it's the same lesson with any type of food, is whatever the ingredient is, whether it's beef or rice, learning how, you know, studying that one ingredient, learning how to cook with it in many different ways that your family and yourself will love, is definitely a worthy thing. You know, put down dopey Facebook and turn off the TV and get your tail end in the kitchen and start doing something that can have a real effect on your life, not, you know, checking Twitter and all that ridiculous stuff. So that would be advice that I would give anybody. And I wanted to just throw this out there: if any of your listeners are interested in any of the courses that they see, you know, the Food Storage Feast, if they use, I just wrote this down while we're speaking, I'm going to go in there and create a coupon, a 10% off coupon. If you just use the initials to your podcast, PRP, that will save $10 on the Food Storage Feast course. So PRP. If anybody wants to get that course, they put that in during checkout and they'll get $10 off.
Shep, thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for the offer for the coupon. That's PRP, and you get $10 off. That's great. And I definitely hope everybody will head over to harvesteating.com and just real quickly tell us how to get the free course there. Tell us one more time where we can find all your work.
Sure. Well, you can go to my main website, harvesteating.com, but the courses, they live on tastyeducation.com, and that's where my paleo beef course is, my free mini course, and also Food Storage Feast. But if you want to just go directly to the landing page for Food Storage Feast, it's just foodstoragefeast.com. And Mark, I appreciate you having me on, and I just hope that everybody can just take a few things that they've learn today and put them into practice, because at the end of the day, I want everybody to be more prepared and to love each other. That's my advice for the day.
Amen. Chef, thanks for making time for us again.
Likewise, thanks for having me on.
The Days of Elijah, Book 4, The Seventh Vial, by bestselling author Mark Goodwin, is now available in paperback, Kindle, and audio edition. The ultimate battle, which will decide the fate of heaven and earth, has finally come. Everett and Courtney Carroll have fared better than most through the past 7 years of the Great Tribulation, but the eve of Armageddon refuses to let them live out the last hours of this present age without conflict, trouble, and persistent peril. The Bible has prophesied of the seven vials of God's wrath, the final judgments which will utterly destroy what's left of a decimated planet. These calamities will bring a plague of festering boils upon the followers of the Antichrist. Rivers and seas will turn to blood, and a global earthquake will raise the cities of the earth to the ground. All of this in the midst of the war to end all wars. It won't be the first time they've been trapped between a rock and a hard place, but it might be the last. Don't miss the final chapter of this end times sensation. Get your copy from Amazon.com today.